joining us here at I Mix What I Like is Arlene Eisen, who is, among other things, an activist, an organizer, and most recently author of the often quoted and referenced, not maybe as often read thoroughly or understood or appreciated for its context, the Operation Ghetto Storm Report, hashtagged as every 28 hours report for the Malcolm X grassroots movement. Arlene, thank you for joining us. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
I wanted to have you on to finally have you speak firsthand about the report you created that is in some circles getting some belated coverage, in other circles getting distorted coverage, and by many referenced and not necessarily read, as I said at the top, for its full depth and context. Could you first just tell us a little bit about what you meant for readers to get from this extensive report, and then we'll get into some of the conversation about some of the criticism or misunderstanding or misuse, and certainly the lack of attribution you in the report itself have gotten.
Well, it's really encapsulated in the title, Operation Ghetto Storm, which, by the way, I did not invent. The police invented that at some training conference, national police training conference that happened in the, so I think it was 2006 or something. They were selling T-shirts with a picture of the ghetto in flames and emblazoned with Operation Ghetto Storm. And this for them, many police, I guess, are veterans of Operation Desert Storm, the invasion of Iraq the first time by Bush Sr. They themselves were thinking and laughing about being at war on the ghetto. And so that's where the title of the report comes from. And the implication of the conclusion from all the data is that there is a systematic war being waged on black people by police, sponsored by the state. In other words, it's not simply a question of some rogue police. They are very much part of a system that starts, whether you want to look at the top first or the bottom, whether it's financing the militarization of the police forces, the impunity with which the police carry on these killings, etc. So that's the point of the report. And I'm hoping that when people say every 28 hours, what it means to them is that these killings are, in fact, systemic, not isolated. They may not have the full analysis, and I hope as many people as possible will check out the report. And I really urge them to go to the website, operationghettostorm.org, one word. Even though MSGM initially published the report, the most updated version is not on the MSGM website due to technical difficulties. And so one of the most telling pieces of information that's in the updated version is something that I call the impunity chart, which takes all the cases and traced them through actually November 4th of this year, even though these are 2012 cases, and shows that of the 313 killings, only 10 officers were ever charged with a crime. And of those charged, only 2 were convicted of manslaughter. And those two, in one case it was this guy named Joshua Kolkoff, who killed Wendell Allen in New Orleans. And his raid was not only videotaped, but there was a huge community outpouring of support because Wendell Allen was a very well-loved athlete, and he I won't take time to go into the details of the case, but and,
well, people can read that at OperationGhettoStorm.org rather.
.org. And but in the end, the policeman who did that murder confessed, and that's the point. He confessed. And in the other case, the one other case, the cop who did the murder was so hated by the force that he had another cop testify against him, and he was found to have drugs in his system. So those are, out of all the cases, all the others either were never charged. I mean, only 10 were charged. All the others, 288 of them, were never charged. And of the charged, they were all exonerated except for those two.
So one of the points, of course, as you're raising here, is this issue of impunity, that of all the cases where, and it's almost exclusively, to my knowledge, and correct me if I'm wrong here, white police officers killing black men or women.
Almost exclusively, although, frankly, we don't have the data on that.
Okay.
I mean, it's hard enough to get the data of the race of the people who are killed very often.
Right.
But, and in a lot of cases, you know, for example, that couple in Cleveland, where 137 shots were fired by half the police force into their car.
Right.
And so, you know, there's so many cops involved in this stuff.
So then it's more about the institution itself,
exactly,
and its relationship to the population, most specifically black men and women. And your report, by the way, just so people are clear, not that I think that you obviously meant to exclude others, but you only focused on African Americans. But if we were to include Latinos or Asians or just or white citizens themselves, these numbers would be even be increased beyond what you found.
Oh, for sure. I mean, well, just to stay on the impunity issue for one more second, the reason why I think it's important to focus, and it's not accidental that the movement today is focused on it as well, you know, that the lack of accountability on the part of the exoneration of all these cops by grand juries and stuff, is that it relates the cop to a larger system, to the whole judicial system, and to a system of laws, to a system of courts, the district attorneys, not just the district attorneys, because basically the cops are doing legal things by the law. And what I'm trying to say is that the state is set up to inflict this sort of violence on oppressed communities, and that's the nature of the state.
So now, you know, with not only with the more recent popular press critique of your report, there have been other criticisms of the report since it came out. First, I think it's important to note that your report first came out in 2012, and it's now the end of 2014, and only now are we seeing a kind of real engagement with your work. And I would also just want to say on the record that I think one of the problems has also been on the alternative, with the alternative media as well. I don't think the so-called alternative press has done enough of a job in covering the report, the substance of it, or the analysis that contextualizes the report. And I'll ask you, you know, if you have any thoughts about that, you're of course welcome to share them. But I did want to have you respond to some of the criticism. You know, when I've referenced the report, the first two things that come up to me in response and in negative response to me are, one, what about black on black crime? Why aren't you more worried about that? And then secondly, this issue of armed versus unarmed. Now, when I've quoted the report, I've never specified, as you don't, and I think people have missed this because they haven't actually, you know, many people who reference it don't read it. But you distinguish between armed and unarmed, and make this point clear that not all of the victims were officially known to be unarmed. But to me, and as even as others have pointed out recently, when it comes to white so-called assailants or criminals, even when they are armed, many of them survive the encounter, whereas when it's black people, they don't survive. So if you could respond to those two things, this issue of black-on-black violence and then armed versus unarmed.
Okay. Well, on the armed versus unarmed issue, firstly, 44% of the people who the black people who were killed were totally unarmed, indisputably unarmed. Another, I'm looking for the numbers here, another huge percentage, whether or not they were armed was in dispute. So in other words, you know, we have well-known cases of police claiming he was reaching for a gun when it was his wallet. I mean, the Amadou Diallo case is the most egregious of that, I guess. About an equal number of people were not only were unarmed, 44%, and I think around 39% or something, if I remember the numbers correctly, were claimed to be armed by the police, but either proven unarmed or never substantiated. And then you get a small, much, much smaller percentage who are armed. So, and they're all, and the reason why I included all of them together is because, first of all, the police lie. Second of all, it is legal in most states to carry weapons openly. It is not illegal to be armed. And that speaks to why the white people who are often armed either don't get stopped by police or don't get killed because they have a gun. So that was the second point I wanted to make about the arm. The third thing is, being armed, even in states where it's illegal, is not a capital offense. I mean, in most societies in the world, civilized societies, capital punishment has been abolished. But even in our society, generally, when capital punishment is inflicted on a person, it's after a lengthy judicial process. But here we have the situation, which is a war, where the cops have this mentality of kill or be killed, and they become the jury, the executioner, no appeals, etc. This is why we call these killings extrajudicial, and extrajudicial killings are a violation of human rights by international law. I just found the number here. It's 44% had no weapon at all, and 27% allegedly possessed a gun, but police reports of gun possession were false.
Even where critics have pointed out in one case that of the initial 313 victims that you cited in the 2012 report, only 100, the low number of 130 could be definitively said to have had no weapon. Even if that was the case, then the math just sets it back to every 68 hours that a black person.
Which is plenty.
So then are they saying that is okay? So if we're saying, so if it was every 68 hours, are they then saying that that's an acceptable number and we should all stop complaining?
I mean, the implication too, about, I mentioned, and you mentioned, that white people seem to be given a pass for carrying arms. We don't have, because, well, part of the impunity of police means that the police are not required to report these cases, and there's been a lot of discussion of this lately, and one of the reasons why this report is so, my report is so often quoted is because it's the first systematic accounting of this problem. But the reason why it doesn't exist is because the police are not required to report. But in those cases where research has been done, Chicago, Houston, New York, Rockford, Illinois, and Saginaw, I did put comparative data in the report. So in a place like Chicago, where black people are just under 33% of the population, then 91% of the people killed by police. And 4% are Latino. And 4% are white. And that 4%, by the way, was one person. So 21 black people were killed by police in Chicago in 2012. One Latino and one white person. In New York, the numbers are, in New York, since it's been in the news so much lately, 28.6% of the population of New York was black. 87% of the people killed were black, and 9% were Latino, 1% white.
So, of course, whether it's Giuliani saying that this is because black people commit all the crimes and therefore deserve all the policing, or other people just generally critical of this kind of analysis, and who claim then that the real issue is A, something wrong with the methodology of the report, or B, that the real issue is black-on-black violence. How do you respond to that?
Well, the black-on-black violence is another issue, although it overlaps with this issue, not only because it results in death, but because let me say the most important thing about it. First is that when a black person kills another black person, generally the killer goes to prison or gets the death penalty or goes to prison for life. And there's no societal legitimacy for this. In fact, everyone is punished. So that's an enormous difference. We don't pay people to kill black people. We don't care. The police do this killing with the authority, with the sanction, with the blessing, with the money, with the arms supplied by this government, which is supposedly a democracy, but I don't think it is, but that makes all the difference in the world. But the other thing that to keep in mind is that a lot, and I haven't studied so-called black-on-black crime, a lot of it relates to the alternative economy, so-called drug trade and that sort of thing. The police are totally involved in drug trade. And ever since, Webb.
Gary Webb.
Yeah. Gary Webb exposed the CIA's involvement in drug trafficking. There have been repeated studies of this, Peter Dale Scott, among others, who have documented conclusively how the CIA manipulates and sponsors the drug trade. They may decimate one gang or one cartel, which has its counterpart in the United States, and then favor another one. And every time they do that sort of thing, there's an upsurge of killings. So the government has to take some responsibility.
And if I could, forgive the interruption, but even before the two examples that you referenced, there's the famous or not famous enough case of Larry Davis, in whose trial it was exposed all of what you're saying, that it was the police
right,
who were
right.
creating the violence and the drug trade and pitting one group against another and forcibly making people like Larry sell drugs for them under the threat of violence or death as part of their ongoing plans and operations. So I think your point is well taken, but please continue.
The other thing, aside from the fact that they're different things, and obviously it's not because we focused on the police doesn't mean we don't care about other black deaths. Of course we do, but there it's another subject, and I think it's I find it very hard to take seriously someone like Mayor Giuliani who raises this issue, because what has he ever done to show any concern for black life, period? And I think it's just a very dishonest way that people who are part of a white supremacist system try to perpetuate this myth of a post-racial America or something, or basically to deny the existence of racism and certainly systemic institutionalized racism.
One of the critiques of your report came from the group PolitiFact, and I only wanted to say on record that this group that claims to do all the important fact-checking for mainstream journalism itself, in my own case, in reference to some work I was involved in around the mythology of black buying power, sought me out to critique other people's reference to that, and then distorted and in many ways destroyed my own analysis of that as they look to incorporate it in their own fact-checking work of other people. So PolitiFact itself as an entity needs its own fact-checking operation
right.
as well.
Well, just to underline that, the most recent fact-check, which comes from today's edition of the Washington Post, I believe, for a fact checker, she was awfully sloppy. For example, she didn't even read the updated version of the report.
Mm-hmm.
Her link is to an obsolete version of the report, which does not include anything about, well, it includes a political discussion and analysis, but it doesn't include the actual data on police impunity. And also, she interviewed me and basically distorted and ignored a lot of what I said. And one of the things that most pisses me off is that she questioned my methodology and my
right.
statistical categories. And I'm a trained sociologist, and she certainly isn't. And she doesn't understand the whole concept of how you just because you have outliers doesn't mean you can't generalize from the main body of the data.
By outliers, you and she both mean people who are acute, who are not officially police officers, who as vigilantes or some other security.
No. She was saying in the 313 dead
mm-hmm.
are included people. I forget his first name was Eugene. I forget his last name. That guy on the drugs who was chewing somebody's face.
Right. Chewing
and,
a homeless man's face.
You know,
face,
some other
right.
people who, in fact, you had to kill.
Right.
And I said very explicitly in the report that of these killings, 12% could be considered justified. I mean, it would still be preferable to not have killed them and to let them have a trial. But, you know, you catch some crazed person in the act of chewing off someone's face, there's not much you can do but shoot them. And so she's kind of debunking the whole effort to demonstrate that this is part of a war on black people by saying, well, what about this shooting this guy who was chewing the face?
Right, and I'm sorry, and another person who was shot by accidentally while hugging a police officer.
Right, and actually the facts of that were in dispute, but I won't take time to go into detail on that. But again, but the other thing that I told her and she ignored was I had made the statement, well, two statements, that if in fact the Department of Justice really cared about justice, they would require the police report this data. It wouldn't be on independent researchers like me to spend 18 months of my life
right.
working, clicking 16 hours a day looking for these cases. But I was trying, so I was saying, well, because she disputed that somebody was killed by a patrol car running her over. And the point is that, in fact, black police in black communities tend to be very, very reckless in their driving and totally ignore pedestrians.
But also, to your point, were the critique of this person, this reporter, to be more honest, or any other person's critique more honest, it could easily be said, as I think you've pointed out before, that the numbers could be much worse. Were everything
right.
reported? Were all these stories properly collected, studied, and analyzed? The numbers could actually be far worse. So rather than finding a few examples or so-called outliers that would challenge your research, there could be others. You know, she herself, working for the Washington Post and all of its resources, could have maybe done some work to support yours and dig up some more to show that it's maybe every 5 minutes.
Yeah. But the other thing I told her, which she ignored, because she said, well, how do you know there are more cases out there? And I said, listen, I had a pile of more than 50 names of people who had been killed by police, whose names kind of sounded black, if you could say that. At least they didn't sound Jewish or something.
Mm-hmm.
But I could never verify what race they had. So they're excluded from the report. So just out of those 50 cases there, you know, we would be down to 24, every 24 hours. I really want to say that this report was essentially ignored by the press for 2 years. And the reason why now anyone is paying attention to it is because people are in the streets. And I think there's a real lesson to that. First of all my admiration, solidarity, hats off to people in the streets. And I think for people who are involved in research that's supposed to serve the community, it's an important lesson for us that unless we serve the community, you know, our research isn't
going to
be that useful.
Well, Arlene Eisen, I greatly appreciate you taking the time to not only have done all this work, but to take a few more minutes to talk with us about it here at I Mix What I Like. Again, the report and all of its updates can be found online at OperationGhettoStorm.org. And again, Arlene Eisen, thank you for joining us. I mix what I like.